Hi guys, welcome to the very first episode of Dwarfism History, where we're going to talk about unheard stories of people with dwarfism throughout history. My name is Aubrey Smalls, and I'm a filmmaker with Dwarfism, and I'm so excited to be launching this podcast. I've put a lot of time and a lot of work into it, so that's why I'm recording it from my bed. You could blame Emma Chamberlain. She kind of inspired me to do a lot of work in bed, because famously, she also records her podcast in bed. But before, just for some backstory, why I'm making a podcast about dwarfism history in general, besides, how many stories about little people do you know throughout history? Sorry, that was aggressive. But I actually hate history, to be quite honest. I did, we'll say, because growing up in history class, I truly was like, why should I care about this? Literally all history is people coming up with new ways to kill each other every few years. Like, literally, congratulations. But then I got older and I eventually started working on a documentary about dwarfism a few years ago, which led me to do more research on people with dwarfism specifically throughout history. And it just really fascinated me. Half of these people who I've excited to talk about, especially Benjamin Lay, are just really inspiring people that I think dwarfism or not should be talked about more. And it's just unfortunate that we haven't really been able to preserve dwarfism history as much. And I hope stuff like this will help keep these people's memories alive. So basically all you need to know is I'm the dwarf Lin-Manuel Miranda, and let's move on. So we're going to talk about Benjamin Lay, as I said. Benjamin was a man in the 17th century who dedicated his life truly to fighting for equal rights for everyone. And at the time, people were still being enslaved, and his life goal was really to see the end of people owning other people. In the course of his life, he was a shepherd, a sailor, a radical abolitionist, and his adventures took him around the world, guys. He was everywhere from the Middle East to Philadelphia. I think he's just a really good example of being a good person, and I think you guys are going to absolutely love him by the time this episode's done. So let's go over some terms that I'm going to use a lot during this episode. First, we have dwarfism. Dwarfism is not a bad word. It's actually the name of a condition that lots of people like myself have, and it results in short stature. Now, there's hundreds of different types of dwarfism, so think of the word as more of an umbrella term. Because, for example, I would have specifically diastrophic dysplasia if you were to ask, why are you so short? But instead of saying diastrophic dysplasia every time, and likewise for other little people, instead of listing the condition they have, we just say dwarfism sometimes. So you can say people with dwarfism, person with dwarfism, those are all great. Little person or LP is also another term that I use a lot, and other people with dwarfism do as well. The largest organization in the United States of America is actually called Little People of America. And the term was coined, I want to say back in the early 60s, and it was made popular by an actor with dwarfism named Billy Barty, who coincidentally founded the LPA, Little People of America. I personally find it to be a little demeaning now. It's not like I'm offended by it, but I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. It's a little weird. But I still use little person a lot. I use LP a lot more, though. I'll be like, oh yeah, like that like a group of LPs went out. Like, you get it? You know what I mean. Another term I use is ableist or ableism, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this, but it's basically just a form of discrimination or prejudice against individuals who have disabilities, whether they be invisible or visible. So it can involve like a person's attitude or beliefs towards people with disabilities that are derogatory or dehumanizing, et cetera, et cetera. Ableism can manifest in various ways, so that can range from overt discrimination to subtle biases or microaggressions. It really just depends. Every person with a disability kind of has their own experience with ableism. I experience it a lot with people either just ignoring me out in public, like even if I'm directly talking to them, people trying to pick me up physically, people following me around in stores, filming me. Just the other week, a guy, when I was driving, was laughing with his friend in his car while videotaping me because he just thought it was funny that I could drive, I guess. Whatever. But yeah, ableism, maybe I'll do an episode on ableism one day because I do feel like that term is, there's not really enough stuff out there about it, I think. Anyways, let me know. The M word. This stands for, I can say it because it's my podcast, midget, but it's a slur and it was used back in the Freak Show days when P.T. Barnum, yeah, the guy that Hugh Jackman played. We love Hugh Jackman though, friend of the show. Famously, we love Hugh Jackman. And he just donated, him and his wife Deborah donated to the SAG fund. So thank you to them. Even though I'm not in SAG, we stand with the unions. And this is filmed amidst the strike. So, the M word though, I try to use it instead of saying midget because so many, I mean, I was bullied for it constantly. I just was not able, I was able to like overcome that, and I don't get triggered per se by the word, but a lot of people do who have dwarfism because it's a slur that's just, it was used to justify sick things, people. Like, they used to literally like marry off children to adults who had dwarfism because it was like, watch the midgets get married. And it, no one cared about the ethics of it because it was like, who cares about the dehumanized like creatures named midgets? And that's why we shouldn't really use words to describe people like that. Like, just call people people because in the past it's been scary. Average height people is what I use for anybody who doesn't have my cat, who I just adopted, who used to be a stray literally just a few weeks ago, is staring at me from the cat tower like, bro, what the f are you talking about? Average height people though is anybody who doesn't have dwarfism. So some people get shook when I say this, but you can be 5'2" or you could be 6'3" and average height to me. Okay, it's the same thing. Okay. Because some people are like, I'm an average height, I'm below average height, I'm above it. I don't care. The world's built for your height range, your average height. And then able-bodied. This is anybody who doesn't have a visible or invisible disability. I think that's really it. Before we begin, today's episode is brought to you by Dear Average Height People. Dear Average Height People is an upcoming documentary comedy special made by people who have dwarfism. It's a deep dive into dwarfism culture, the lives of little people around the world, and hate groups online that exist to harass people with disabilities. As the creator of the film, I am so excited to get back to filming. Our fundraiser as of today is at 64%, and thanks to people like you who have stumbled across my content on the internet and decided to donate a few dollars, we've raised over $22,000. But in order to get back to filming, we need to raise $35,000. So if you want to support and help us cross the finish line, visit dearaverageheightpeople.com. Again, dearaverageheightpeople.com. Okay, get your snack. It's time to get to today's episode of Dwarfism History. Benjamin Lay was born in England on April 26, 1682. I need someone to figure out his astrological chart and DM it to me at Dwarfism History on Instagram. But he was born to William and Prudence Lay, who were farmers and both average height. To my knowledge, based on my research, Benjamin was the only person in his family, who had dwarfism. We're not sure exactly the type of dwarfism that he had, but he was about 4'7 as an adult, and he was described as having thin legs. He had kyphosis, which is like a curvature of the spine, so he had like a hunchback. I don't know if that's an offensive term. I like when in my notes, I was like, I'm not sure of calling if that's an acceptable term, hunchback. Anyway, you guys are like, what? He had a very simple upbringing. I mean, they were farmers in the 1600s, guys. He didn't come from money at all, so he had no education as a child. And it was later on in life that he was actually able to educate himself. But again, my cat's staring at me like, girl, I don't care about this. Turn on CoComelon. As a teenager, he moved to live with his brother on his farm where he worked as a shepherd. And this is something that Benjamin loved, which I'm literally in love with this man. Anybody who likes animals is a good person, hands down. Can't do anything bad. I mean, historically, if you look back at all the horrible people, none of them had pets. can I actually fact check this? No, I can't. Anyways, he loved being a farmer. He was just a tender soul, okay? But he also needed adventure, as you will see throughout this story. So soon he was like, you know what? This is great, but... And instead of inheriting his family's farm when he was 21, he decides to move to London and become a sailor. And now I know you're thinking, how is a little person a sailor? And I also, okay, hold on. Kitten, Junie, please don't do that. She's like hanging off my windows. Please no, thank you. I love you so much though. He's just obsessed with climbing up. I was a dog person, okay? And my dog passed a year-ish ago, a year and a half. And this is the first cat I've ever owned, okay? So I'm learning. Anyways, back to Benjamin Lay. He becomes a pirate, I mean a sailor. And for 12 years, he sails around the world, and it's actually kind of useful being his height if you think about it, because there's parts of the rigging on a ship that average height people struggled to get into. And he fit snug, you know, he fits into every nook and cranny. So he's super useful. He lives, I believe, in London during this time if he's not on the sea, but he's like on the boat for like most of the 12 years that he's a sailor. And he's a super religious guy, so he's going around. He's educating himself, too, while he's on this boat. He's reading books, so he starts to visit, like, historical sites from the Bible. And that includes places in the Middle East, which I was like, damn, my boy was getting around. Like, girl was from, like, England back in the 1600s. Gets on a boat at 4 feet tall. And then next thing you know, he's in the Middle East. Anyways, so he's out living his parts of the Caribbean life, right? And this is when the beginning of his villain origin story starts. And it wasn't because, again, he was 4 feet tall on a boat fighting for his life every day. But it was because this is when he starts to get cultured, okay? He starts to hear things and learn some stuff. Okay, now my cat's listening. She's like, ooh, what's this part? So he basically just made aware of slavery for the first time. Or not even maybe for the first time, but just like the true horrors of the transatlantic slave trade. He's starting to collect all of these stories from men who were working on the slave ships or were hearing about it and meeting Benjamin. And Benjamin, again, is a tender soul, loves animals, loves people, just wants adventure in life. He's not thinking about owning people, so this is, like, deeply upsetting to him. Wait, is April a Pisces? Because I'm like, it's just because he's a Pisces like me. We're like, slavery? It's not okay. Okay, so he's on this boat. He's learning all this horrible stuff. He's also living in London at this time sometimes when he's on the boat. Eventually, he meets another little person who has the same kind of medical issues and conditions that he does, and it's a woman named Sarah. And despite disabled people at the time being kind of shunned and looked down upon, Sarah was kind of able to cheat the system by being a slay. And by being a slay, I mean she was super brilliant, okay? She was a great speaker. She was able to kind of transcend ableism in a way and become an approved minister. Quakerism, I'm calling it, but being a Quaker at the time was kind of the religion. Benjamin was a Quaker. Sarah was a Quaker. I mean, do your own independent research, okay? But Quaker is basically Christian Catholic 1600s version, okay? But okay, they were a little bit more woke. They were not me using that word. What I mean by that, they weren't calling it like church or like mass. They were basically like, they were calling it meetings, and they were like the friendly society. Like they were, it was a little cultish, if I'm being honest, but they believed in like not having like a priest and stuff. Like it was all, and you weren't like praying to like a god. You were praying more to like yourself, and like it was more communal and less like, you know. Anywho, Sarah became a Quaker as a kid. Her father, I believe, was a plasterer, and her mother, at some point in her young adult life, passed away. But her and Benjamin fall in love, and next thing you know, they're getting married, or at least they're trying to get married. Benjamin, oh, I forgot one part in my notes. Benjamin said, we have very few actual records of little people because of how, again, they were treated like second-class people. So any record that we do have, I think, is important to note. And he has been quoted saying that he believes that she was pretty much alike in stature and other ways, just that they were like two peas in a pod. I think that's so sweet. Like, imagine just like no internet, no knowing that there's other little people out there, never seeing like anybody like you or who knows what you go through every day, even just like physical pain wise, the unique physical challenges that we face as little people. And then meeting your, you know, for a second I thought that it wasn't recording and I almost quit. I was like, you know what? We don't need an Orphans Mystery podcast. So Benjamin wanted to marry Sarah, but in order to do so at the time, you basically had to be in good standing as a Quaker to get a certificate to get married. Like, what? That's so weird. So basically, he was a Quaker, she was a Quaker. To get married, to have your marriage recognized, you had to get a certificate. And Benjamin, he was a little bit of a stinker, okay? He was not cool with the whole people owning slaves thing, and that was definitely a prevalent issue. So he was known to speak out a lot already, even during this time of his life, against, you know, Quakers who were owning slaves. Because he was like, well, isn't that, like, technically per law, according to math and science,
hypocritical.
because he was basically just calling people hypocrites all the time, and that kind of made people upset. So, in order to kind of bypass the technicality of having to get a certificate from his local chapter, we'll say, of Quaker, I don't know, the Quaker community, Quaker 101, Quaker his, I don't want to be disrespectful because I know that it's still a thing, but it's just an awkward word, okay? Quaker Oats. So since no one in London was going to give him the certificate, he got on a boat with the love of his life, Sarah, and they crossed the Atlantic and found themselves in Boston. I mean, not Boston, in Salem, Massachusetts. I just said Boston because I didn't want to say Massachusetts because I didn't want to mess it up. Because I'm not going to lie, I recorded me saying it because I messed it up. It was embarrassing. Anywho, so they get to Salem and they were really shady back then, to be quite honest, because they didn't have internet. But he gets to Salem and he's like, hello, can I please get a marriage certificate? One marriage certificate coming up. And then they're like, okay, but before we give him the certificate, we're gonna write to the old congregation in London, the one that was like, we're not gonna give it to him because he's weird. And they basically write to the Quakers in London. The Quakers in London write back and they're like, I mean, he's fine, but like, he's not great. So then, like, they basically spill all the tea on the fact that he is calling everybody a hypocrite and that he's like anti-slavery and all that stuff. So, he ends up going back to London and is still causing a havoc, still with no marriage certificate. And eventually, there's like this whole investigation, and they conclude that Benjamin still sucks, but that he should be allowed to get married. So, although he gets kicked out of his congregation in the end, he gets married, and him and Sarah are like, we literally have traveled across the freaking sea to get married and back. We're leaving everybody behind. So they run off together like two lovers. Ugh, I love them. And truly, I'm not even kidding. Like, I'm not even glamorizing the relationship. I'm absolutely jealous of them. They were, ugh, I hope to find that one day. But I can't even get a text back. And the man that I do love is busy with other men. You're like, what is that doing in a dwarfism history podcast? Anyways, so they moved to Barbados because he's trying to get as far away possible. And they hear about a lovely little Quaker community in Barbados. So they get there, and it's literally American Horror Story live in person, and now my cat's chewing and attacking her cat tower. It's just so cute. Little kittens are so adorable. So it's American Horror Story over there because they basically, there's more enslaved people on that island than there are people who are not slaves. So again, Benjamin, as someone who truly does not believe that people should be owning slaves like that, so much so that he's calling out people in his own community every day about it, and then he gets to this place where every single person that you meet who's also supposed to be this, you know, all rights matter. Quaker people are also like routinely beating their slaves every single Monday so that they're too weak to even fight back. Yeah, he's like, I have a problem with this. And at the beginning, he, this is the only awful thing that Benjamin's, I almost called him Benjamin Slay. Benjamin Lay did was he set up a little shop there with stuff that he had, you know, brought over from London, and people are stealing from him, and he's chasing after them, and then they're slaves. And he says that he whips some of them, like gives them a lash as punishment, and then he feels immensely bad about it because he realizes that they're stealing for a reason, nerd. Because yeah, they're either stealing stuff to sell for food, or they're stealing food because they're malnourished. And he realizes that it's really, really like basically hell there. He becomes friends with a man who's enslaved and kind of starts to build this community where him and his wife start taking these enslaved individuals under their roofs, feeding them, providing them with an education, comfort. It's estimated that he's helped, you know, thousands and thousands of enslaved people. So time passes, and one day he finds out that his friend, who was the enslaved man that I had mentioned earlier, he finds out that that friend killed himself the day before his weekly beating. And meanwhile, like, his wife, Sarah, is going to her friend's house one day. This is how bad it is. And she's just like walking alone, la 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 la, comes up to her friend's house. I mean, not friend, but comes up to this person's house that she was going to. And she's frozen in shock, frozen in fear. Literally the most horrifying thing she's ever seen in her life. And it's this man who, a black individual who was a slave, and he's hanging by a tree above like a pool of blood, and he's still alive, may I just say. Like, that's what was sick about this time. They were like, we'll make sure you live for sure. And that's why I'm like, if there's a hell, they are burning in it. Anyways, I was gonna laugh, but I'm like, I don't actually think I'm joking. But so she sees this and she goes into their house and she's like, hello. And the slave master's like, oh yeah, they tried to run away, so you know, gotta do what you gotta do. So this is obviously very upsetting for Benjamin and Sarah, and I know that they, some accounts say it was Benjamin who said this, some say it was Sarah, but ultimately they're like, if we stay, are we going to become so desensitized that we start like, I don't even know if they thought that they'd be okay with it. I think they just thought they'd be desensitized to it. And they felt so strongly that it wasn't okay, but there was so little they could do. And they were already starting to get heat from other Quakers for like helping the enslaved and like being anti-slavery. So it was posing to be more dangerous for them to stay. So after a year and a half of being in Barbados, they were forced to move back to London after a ton of harassment from other slave owners who didn't like their message that you shouldn't own other people, bitches. Speaking of Barbados, before we leave, it's just so crazy to think that before, when I thought of Barbados, I thought of Rihanna. And now I think of Benjamin Lay. Anywho. So they get back to London, and unfortunately, a lot of people own slaves, especially Quakers. Over half the Quakers there own slaves. And Benjamin's, you know, some time has passed. He's seen like actual hell, and he's like, no, 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 no. So he starts really going in on his critiques of his fellow Quakers. So Benjamin starts his career of terrorizing every person who owns a slave, which I love for him. Truly, I really respect that for him. But unfortunately, the worst thing that could happen to him personally happens. Sara Lee dies at 58. Her cause of death is unknown, but it seems to be something that was very unexpected. And I can imagine after 17 years of marriage, especially as he said, they were basically the same person. This is probably awful. This is when I believe he moves to a cave because he can't stand living amongst slave owners. That's truly just upsetting to him. He doesn't want to be associated with that life. And sometimes he'll even go as far as walking 20 miles from his cave to dramatically protest slavery. Anyways, not only did Benjamin live in this cave, but he also started to make his own clothes from undyed tow linen because he didn't want to wear any material that was, come from harmed animals or is connected to slavery in any way. And he did use some leather, but it was only leather from animals that had died from natural causes. He was also a strict vegetarian. He had a bee farm. I'm like, what did this man not do? But he did eat honey from the bees that he raised, and he did drink milk as well. He didn't do tea though, because of the abuses in the tea industry in Asia. So he wasn't just pro-black. Again, he was pro everybody. I just saw my audio spike so high. This is gonna be so much fun to edit. So, anyways, he just goes for the next few years of his life. It's just like he goes all in on the end slavery, like balls to the walls. So, I'm just gonna go through a list of some of the dramatic protests that we know he did for sure, because again, we don't have a lot of historical data on dwarfism because, again, little people and disabled people, just in general, were not considered worthy of, I guess, having records or, I mean, to be honest, so many little people have been bought throughout history that it just is like impossible probably to keep up with lineages and stuff like that. But anyways, so in one example, a Quaker in his community had bought an enslaved child who was around maybe 6 or 7 years old. And Benjamin was so horrified at this idea of a family being ripped apart in such an evil way that he befriended the child of this slave owner. And one day when the parents were busy, he's like, "Hey, come over to my house. We'll have some tea, we'll have some cookies." And the kid's like, "Okay, we love this short guy." So the kid goes off with him, and then his parents come back and they're like, "Where's our kid? Hello?" So they're looking everywhere, they start freaking out. Benjamin lets them freak out. Meanwhile, he's like having fun with the child, chilling, normal, non-slave owning things. So eventually he returns the kid and he's like, "Hey, so if this upset you, just imagine how every single person you've split up," he just really went in on them. And that is why I thank you to my man, to my man. Thank you to my man, because I mean, really, he gave them what he needed to give them, which was a lesson in just a little taste of the horrors that they were inflicting on, black people at the time. He also one time hiked 20, I mean, not hiked, he walked 20 miles, which for little people, one step for me, I mean, one step for you is like 2.5 steps for me and other little people. So 20 miles, he basically walked 40, okay? I'm just gonna say it. He walked 40, and you can't argue with me. So he walks 40 miles, I'm gonna make say 50 just for the effect, 50 miles all the way to this Quaker meeting house. And he was dressed, he had a sword, he was dressed in a little like outfit, like a little general outfit. He had a book, that he had cut out a hole in the middle. I think it was a Bible. And he cut out a hole in the middle and he put a sack of like fake blood, like juice in it, like a gross. Ugh. So then he marches into this meeting house and he makes this dramatic speech and he's just basically like, again, I'm not your history teacher at Harvard. I mean, I would love to actually guest speak at Harvard, like a commencement speech, but that's beside the point. I'm not gonna give you the full quote of what he said, but he was basically like, "Your hoe. Your hoe." "Your hoe, your hoe." He didn't say that, but he was like, "You're a hypocrite, and you're a hypocrite, and you're a hypocrite. You're horrible people. You're gonna die." I mean, he didn't say that either. He's like, "You're awful for owning slaves." No, but he was basically just like, "You guys are awful for using religion to mask your evil desires for mankind." And then he dramatically stabs this book, and blood is splattering literally everywhere. Again, it's fake blood. But it's like splattering on these slave owners' faces. It's not even like they feel bad about owning slaves. They're more just embarrassed. Like, they're always just like, "Oh, Benjamin, really? Like, come on, bro." They're not even like, "Wow, I deserve the right to do this." They're just like, "Come on, dude. Like, get it together." So they're more just embarrassed by all of these acts that he's doing. Like, sometimes, like, when it's snowing or raining outside, he'll just lay in the mud outside of the Quaker meeting house, so everyone has to march, like walk over him, and they're just like, "What are you doing, bro?" And he's like, "This is what it's like for all the people you enslave that have to live in unhumane conditions out in the cold or out in the mud or, you know, with no shoes on." Like, he would fully be out there like half naked because he's like, "Well, this is what the people you enslaved look like, so why do you have a problem with me doing it?" And they're like, "Oh, put some clothes on." And he's like, "Why? Put some clothes on your slaves and then free them, bitch." I didn't really know if this podcast was gonna include cursing, but we'll see if I edit it out. So anyways, he's really doing all of these dramatic, you know, acts of protest, 'cause, and they're really theatrical in nature, and that's why I think this would make an amazing movie, and I need A24 to let me write this. Let me, you know, I know who, I just know how it would go down, okay? I know exactly what it would look like, but so he's going ham on these protests. He's really making these people look like the fools that they are. Meanwhile, randomly, he's best friends with Benjamin Franklin. I mean, Benjamin Franklin is making the trip out to this little guy's cabin, I mean, his cave, to visit him and to hang out. Isn't that so? I mean, I'm not gonna say it speak because Benjamin Franklin owned slaves. And thankfully, because of his friendship with Benjamin Lay, because I think he had a crush on Benjamin Lay, low-key. But he, and just, I mean, we're not gonna praise him for this, but it was better than nothing. But he eventually rewrote his will so that his slaves that he did own would get freed after he died, blah, blah, blah. Who knows if that even happened, though. But anyways, Benjamin Franklin loves Benjamin Lay, even though Benjamin Lay is a little bit of a crazy person. I mean, Benjamin Franklin, considering he was friends with Benjamin Lay but also owned slaves, I imagine he was that type of person who was like, "I know it's wrong, but I'm like so deep in the culture of it, but I understand, but I'm not ready to let it go." I don't know. That's just the in my head, Benjamin Franklin in the movie is played by Tom Hanks in a really good wig, like a really good lace front wig, not like Tom Hanks in a shitty wig, but like Tom Hanks being like pure, because I imagine their relationship was very like bromance, you know? Like, I really think it's adorable. Sorry, my cat's trying to climb up the window curtain again. Anyways, so that's why she was named Spider originally, but I'm like, I don't know if I can give a girl cat the name Spider, but anyways. I'm literally laying on the back. Oh, I'm literally laying on my back, like kicking my feet in the air, telling the story. Like, there was a bromance and blah, 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 blah. I need to go back to my notes. Hold on. Oh, never mind. No notes. I know what I was talking about. So he becomes best friends with Benjamin Franklin. And eventually, Benjamin Lay writes this book that's just this really dramatic burn book that's calling out all these Quakers who own slaves and just listing in detail at length every single reason why they're horrible people and should reconsider this awful way of thinking. And again, this book was really controversial, so no one wanted to publish it. But guess who did? His lover, I mean, his friend, Benjamin Franklin. Yes, Benjamin was like, "I'm not gonna put my name on it, you know, that's just too personal, but I'll post it for you, you know? I'll anonymously support you." So again, that's why I'm like, we're not celebrating Benjamin Franklin in this, but I just think it's iconic that we talk so much. Like, Benjamin Franklin's a household name, you know? And I just love that a household name was friends with a little person. Anyways, so this is when we start getting less information about Benjamin's life. As he gets older, his shenanigans, you know, start dying down. And during this time, we're definitely starting to see some people accept Benjamin's mentality. not necessarily in Benjamin's community, but he's not like the crazy person he was 40, 50 years ago. Because Benjamin lived quite a long life, actually. Let me look it up. I want to see. Okay, the cat climbing the window thing is really. It's a lot for me. Okay, 77, yeah. So 1759 is when he passed away, which was so sad because 50, his wife died in 39, to, I mean 35, which means that he was without his poor wife for the last 24 years of his life. And that just is really sad to me. I just know the relief in his heart that he must have felt when he found someone like him. And then to lose that person. Anyways, so for the rest of his life, Benjamin continued to care about people. He continued to visit Quaker schools, give out books to the kids to help them get an education and learn more about the world around them. He was incredibly charitable. He even spoke out about things like the death penalty, so ahead of his time. He, of course, continued to advocate for, the proper treatment of animals. Now, in the very last year of his life, he is living secluded by himself, and one of his old friends from his Quaker community in Philadelphia comes to him. And he's like, "Buddy, guess what?" But he's like, no. He's like, basically, we're disowning members who are involved in the slave trade. So, yeah, it kind of worked. And he's like, my God, it worked. My God, it worked. I'm just kidding. But no, Benjamin was just like an old guy. And he's like, you know what? I literally can die in peace now. Because, again, that was like his real life mission. I truly believed he was like a stubborn person. He was like, you know what? No, I won't die until people like get the vision, and the vision was equality. So yeah, literally he's like, I can die in peace, and a year later he died. Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's not sad, but I just think it's sad. It's beautiful, we'll say, because he did so much in his life. He truly went all around the world. Like, he did something that we like now dream of doing, which is seeing so many nooks and crannies of this universe. And he did it without a plane, a train, a bike, a boat. He had to go on a ship, not a cruise, a ship. He had to work for it. And this story, in conclusion, just really resonates with me because I truly believe things when I believe them. And specifically when I talk about like just basic rights for people. And that's definitely dictated how I lived my life. I do believe that people should be treated equally and fairly. And I have always felt that way, even before I understood the differences that, make up people. I have such a heart for animals. I worked, the happiest time of my life was when I worked at an animal shelter for dogs when I was like 19, 20, 21. I really understand people who have that heart for animals. I think this story teaches us that it takes a lifetime sometimes to get the point across. And that, if you believe in something, especially when it comes to human rights, you gotta stick with it. And that's why I've stuck with TikTok and lately Instagram. I don't really think of myself as like an influencer, quote unquote. I just really wanna spread this knowledge because it's really inspired me and helped me think about life differently and understand that, like in Benjamin's case, he did not let his condition stop him. And I know it's so corny, but don't let things stop you that don't need to stop you. Speak up for what's right. Like, don't you guys see what I mean by this could be a movie? Like, I can just see this being like an epic historical drama that's a mix between Pirates of the Caribbean, 12 Years a Slave, The Color Purple. I think it has everything that's needed to be a four quadrant film. For those who don't know what that means, that's just basically a movie that can appeal to everybody. There are movies sometimes that appeal to one demographic, like an age group or a gender or a race, and some movies that appeal to everybody. I think everybody, regardless of their walk of life, can relate to this story and be inspired by him because not only was he a person who believed in fighting for what was right, regardless of the cost, He also believed in taking care of people, and I think we need to do a little bit more of that. I try to take care of people in my life and people that I love every single day, and I try by posting content that's positive and educational, and although it might be like depressing at some time because of the issues that we face as little people, I hope at the end of the day it encourages you or brings you some type of warmth in your life, let's just say. Whether that like is inspiring or motivating or whatever, I just hope it makes you feel happy. So I admire anybody who, dedicates their life also to uplifting others. And Benjamin did that in his own way, in a really impactful way that I could only ever hope to come close to, like he was literally fighting for the rights of people who were being tortured on the daily, It's just really upsetting. And I'm like, I post TikTok videos. I think this would be a really amazing film. If I had to pitch it to you right now, I'd say it's something that A24 should produce. I think it should feel really grounded, but really cinematic in scope, and truly feel like you're going on an epic adventure spanning across this person's life. I probably would cast three separate little people for Benjamin. I think you need to see him. Like truly the full span of this story, and I don't want to see, a 40-year-old man play a teenager and then be in prosthetics to play his old version. I just don't think that would be cool. I am gonna stand by Tom Hanks being Benjamin Franklin. Like that would be my pitch. I'd be like, I'd go to Tom Hanks and I love how I'm acting as if I'm like have this power, but I'd be like, Tom, help me get on board with this. Let's pitch this to somebody. Let's get this out there. I honestly would say this needs to be a theatrical release. I believe in streaming movies. I think some movies should be streaming movies, but I think this needs to be seen on the big screen because I feel like you need to be like out there on the ocean exploring with him, and then you need to be like in the midst of this awful, like dark world of slavery and abuse and torture, and then you need to like, I feel like you just need to go on the epic adventure, and I don't know if that would be conveyed on like an iPad. But knowing how the entertainment world's gonna go, this will probably be a movie sold to TikTok. And you know what? I would sell it to TikTok. I do believe that TikTok movies are going to be a thing. But anyways, let me wrap this episode up. Thank you guys so much for being here with me today. I have had so much fun. Oh, I need to answer a question from my Instagram. Every week I'm going to answer a question. It doesn't have to be about dwarfism or dwarfism history, but I'm going to answer a question from the dwarfism history Instagram page. So if you want to see your question answered potentially in the future, Dwarfism History on Instagram, you can DM me and I'll take a look. So today's question comes from Carly on Instagram. She asked advice for average height parents with an LP baby. Again, LP stands for little person. Love the slang. My biggest advice is just to expect to be your kid's biggest cheerleader. And I believe that if you have a child that's of a different, like, culture or disability group, that you should try your best to, connect your kid with that community. And there's a huge dwarfism community out there. I know Peter Dinklage said one time that there's like no group of little people, but that's not true. There's literally like, think of the Boys and Girls Club or Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts. There's like a network of that for little people as well. And we have conferences and there's like local meetups in different states and stuff like that. So I would definitely, it's not for everybody for sure though. That's a whole other episode. But finding community within the disability community, I think, is really important. Even if it's just like over Zoom, trust me, little people want to connect with each other. And you're not alone. I hope that this podcast will grow and be like a resource hub so that people who aren't familiar with dwarfism can kind of learn about people that they can tell their kids who have dwarfism. Because I guarantee you, your kids are not going to learn about any of the people that I talk about on this podcast in school. And I know I would have really wished to have known of people who were real and were not like characters on a screen that had dwarfism that were amazing. So again, be your kid's biggest cheerleader, connect them with other little people. My goal is to make some really great representation in the next 10 years that hopefully your kid by the time they're, you know, 10, since they're a baby now, we'll have a decade's worth of content to flip through that's positive and inclusive with people who look just like them. Fingers crossed. That concludes today's episode of Dwarfism History. Thank you guys so much for being here. If you guys want to know more about Benjamin's story, go to dwarfismhistory.com because I've compiled all the resources that I found about his life in the show notes. So go to the resources tab. But yeah, that's all for today. I love you guys. Keep going.